This is The Topic is Trek, Episode 4, for August 30th, 2017. Tranya Hangover. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm one of your co-hosts, Clinton Allvord. Just a reminder that there are 25 days until Star Trek Discovery premieres. Yay. And still no one has any word on who is hosting Talking Trek, the Discovery After Show.
Pick me.
Well, those voices are my co-hosts. So beaming in to join me, as always, are Chuck Tomasi.
Hi.
Hello. And Mr. Craig Stepp.
Greetings.
Who apparently is now a robot. You never know what's going to happen. Oh, there, I think he's just burping.
Welcome, Captain Kirk. Please, sit down.
So if we seem a bit punchy, it's because we're getting ready for Dragon Con at the same time as we're recording this show.
I have lots of isolinear chips that need sorting out on this end.
Hey, wait a minute. I just got a new costume idea. I'll be right back.
He's dressing up as an isolinear chip? What?
Yeah, that's right. It's not the most exciting thing, but...
Wesley sweater? What am I missing?
Wesley sweater.
Because what you want in Atlanta is to wear a sweater.
Never.
Yeah. Said nobody ever.
Well, we have a full show this evening, so why don't we get right into it with our subspace chatter. So let's see what's happening in and around the Trek universe. I'm going to start things off with some very happy news. And this is Star Trek's Terry Farrell engaged to Leonard Nimoy's son, Adam Nimoy.
Didn't see that coming.
Okay, Trekkies, get ready to geek out at this beautiful news. Don't tell Worf. But Terry Farrell, who played fan-favorite character Jadzia Dax on the 90s series Star Trek Deep Space Nine, is engaged to Adam Nimoy, the son of late Star Trek legend Leonard Nimoy, a.k.a. Spock. Film critic and Trekkie Scott Mance, who really is an over-the-top Trekkie, first reported the news on Twitter Friday, and that's a week or so ago. Terry confirmed it Saturday. Serious? Not fake news? Baby will be 1/16th Vulcan, wrote Twitter user at Sepulra, to which the 53-year-old actress responded, LOL, nope, not fake news, it's for real, she added. Wow, that sounded like a 50s reporter. Not fake news, it's for real, she says. So that's out of the blue. Not out of the blue to them, obviously, but out of the blue to a lot of us in fandoms. What happened there?
I got tired of waiting on her, so I got married myself. So
That picture a couple of years ago, so that's as close as I'm gonna get.
It's pretty close, actually. It was kind of I made it awkward because I thought we were waiting on somebody to take a picture, and she was like, well, the lady behind the desk was gonna take it for us or something. Or remember that, Chuck?
Yeah.
And she was pretty nice about it.
She eventually did take the picture. I made it even more awkward by telling Terry that she reminded me of my sister.
Yeah, I can see why she moved on to Adam.
Yeah, forget this.
Weirdo. Right.
Okay, so we'll move on to Craig for our next story.
Yes, brace yourself.
Who rolled this D20? How did this happen? Yeah.
All right, so this is Star Trek. This is like a lost episode of Star Trek, The Next Generation. Star Trek porn without the porn. They say is the best fan film ever.
Isn't that like caffeine-free Mountain Dew?
Yeah, sort of. And it says as Trekkies everywhere prepare themselves for a Star Trek Discovery, it is time to take a look back at one of the best unexplored storylines of the era of Next Generation, the classic two-part episode in which Tasha Yar came back to life. No, we're not talking about the episode of the real Next Generation, but instead a fan film that goes by the name of Star Trek, The Next Generation, a XXX parody. Yeah, it was released in 2001 by Digital Sin, as opposed to Realistic Sin, I guess. The movie is unique for one reason. If you take the porn out of the Star Trek porn, it is fairly thoughtful fan film that actually addresses real questions fans would have, and features a pretty solid actor in the role of Captain Jean-Luc Picard, which, yes, I agree, he does. Yes. He pretty much nails it.
So have we all watched this? I know that Craig and I watched the it's broken into a couple of parts, I think. So we watched the first part of it.
I have not. Yeah.
It's very, it's work safe even because they've taken pretty much all the naughty bits out of it.
So it went from an hour to 15 minutes?
Exactly. There's opening credits, the end credits, and you see everybody, for a second.
Here's Picard putting his boots on.
Yeah. Ooh, Captain. But they have uniforms, they have sets, they use special effects for, you see ships, you see phasers. They actually are using plot lines from the show, or addressing plot lines from the show.
Mm-hmm. Even, I would say, even Data looked pretty good because he had that, all the makeup and everything on, just like Brent Spiner does.
Although Geordi is wearing a pair of just very thin sunglasses.
That's what I was going to say. He looks more like a gangster in this.
I mean, gangster. I don't blame him. I mean, LeVar didn't like those, that visor, so. You don't have to wear it. Don't.
Who was the guy from Crocodile Dundee, Downtown Leroy Brown that had glasses like that? I'm telling you, this is for real in engineering.
Well, they even wrote Geordi out of the glasses eventually.
That's right.
Yeah. What's so funny?
That big long gap. That dead air was priceless.
So I'm not sure there's much else to say about this.
Go on.
Well, I would say check it out. It's kind of funny because there's scenes where you see where they're leading into a sex scene and it like ends or whatever. And it's kind of part's a little funny, but actually it wasn't that bad of an episode. So.
They'll do a fade or a wipe or something like that, and we'll just move on to the next scene. So,
right.
Meanwhile, on the planet Alderaan 6.
Yeah. And they mentioned the guy, Giles Aston, who plays Picard. He sounded, every time he opened it, he sounded just like, Patrick Stewart.
T. Earl Grey, hot.
Yeah. T. Earl Grey, I'm hot.
I think we better move on to the next story at this point.
If we're turning the dial that way, I'm going to take it.
Okay.
New trailer confirms that Star Trek Discovery will be TVMA.
Priming missing in action?
No. Ma!
Ma!
Ma! TV Ma!
Priming fans for its September 24th debut, CBS released a new trailer for Star Trek Discovery a few days ago. Full of shots of heroic Starfleet officers and menacing Klingons arguing it out. Klingons wearing Spider-Man webs around their neck. The most interesting detail about the trailer was a little pop-up in the upper left corner, though confirming that the series set to debut on CBS proper before making its way online onto the network's All Access service will be rated TVMA. Per Entertainment Weekly, the show's producers have made it clear that, despite the rating, the new Trek won't be all bloody violence, gratuitous space swearing, and blatant TNA. Oh, darn.
No. I'm going to leave that for that parody.
For that, yeah. We'll still have to pull out the old Lex DVDs, apparently. I'm not, quote, I'm not saying we're not doing some violent things or doing a tiny bit of language, quote, producer Aaron Harberts told EW. But what's important to the creative team is the legacy of the show, which is passed down from mother to daughter, from father to son. I feel like we need some dramatic music in the background. From brother to brother. We want to make sure we're not creating a show that fans can't share with their families. You have to honor what the franchise is. I would say we're not going beyond hard PG-13.
And I meant to look up what shows these days on television rate a TV MA rating.
Oh.
I'm not sure what shows that, you know, how that stacks up in the... you know, just what you would normally see on television these days.
In one of the movies, it was either Riker or Picard. They were getting into a situation and one of them went, shaving cream, only they didn't say shaving cream.
Well, here you go. Here's some shows that are, here's the most popular US TV MA title.
Oh, it's Data. Okay. I think when they were crashing into the planet. Sorry, I'm listening, Craig.
All right, Game of Thrones, The Defenders, Ozark. Now, some of those are from Netflix, of course.
Right.
Rick and Morty. Okay. Atypical, which that's also on Netflix. Ballers, HBO. The Walking Dead, that's TVMA. Okay.
Yes, heavily violent. Yeah.
Ray Donovan is TVMA. I don't watch that, but I know about it. Shameless. These are all Netflix shows, pretty much. Breaking Bad, American Horror Story, Orange is the New Black, The Strain, Westworld, The Handmaid's Tale, and it just kind of keeps going from there.
I'm reading the comments off of this blog. There's a couple of priceless ones here.
Never read the comments.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Will they finally explain why they just don't build giant replicators in order to construct ships? And the response I bet stoners in the Trek universe ask that a lot.
Well, we'll actually be talking about it in a few minutes ourselves. But so those shows that you were listing off there, Craig, those do tend to lean towards things that are graphic. So I'm not sure what is in the show that is getting at the TV MA rating.
I have a feeling they probably stepped all over the line a little bit and got that rating, but it's probably like they said a hard, what did it say? PG-13.
Yeah. I think that, you know, in some cases you do stuff sometimes to get the rating. I remember that Star Trek, the motion picture was rated G. And
yes,
I think that there was some feeling that hurt it because a G rating almost implied it was for kids. So they had to do something to get it above a G rating. And I don't know whether the feeling here is that, well, you know, we just don't want it to be listed as for all audiences. We need to, I mean, we're going to find out in just a few weeks, and
I think
few weeks to be over, but
yeah. And I hope it's nothing like it's a continuing thread throughout the whole series.
Yeah.
That I hope it's like probably the first episode or so, you know, something happens to get that kind of rating, because I think it should be somewhat family friendly. You know, there's going to be fighting and stuff like that, but you know, enough where you're not going to be like, Harrison, cover your eyes when you see the scene.
Oh, someone's in the shower.
Decompression. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, hey, I remember watching Enterprise when it first started, and it was like the first episode, second. They were showing some stuff, and it looked like kind of soft porn.
Oh, you're talking about inside the
decontamination?
Yes. We have this gel. Oh, my.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, you know what? Even I'm starting to feel uncomfortable with this.
You have to rub it all over each other.
Yes. Yeah. We're back to that porn thing again. Now let's move on.
I'm looking forward to Star Trek Discovery AXXX parody.
with Picard in it for some reason. Well, we got the actors, so we're just going to use him.
I've time traveled.
Go ahead. Let's move on to the next story then.
Yes.
Watch Star Trek Voyager's intro sequence remastered from scratch in stunning 4K. And this is the point at which I mentioned that if you're listening to the show, which obviously you are because you're hearing my voice, that if you go to our website, thetopicistrek.com, do I get a ding for that? There we go.
Ding.
We have the show notes for all the articles that we're talking about. So anytime we're talking about a video, including this one, you'll be able to click through to see that video. And the story here goes, an official high-definition remastering of Star Trek Voyager will almost certainly never happen. While arguably less popular than TNG and DS9, the show, which followed a Starfleet crew stranded in the Delta Quadrant 700,000 light-years from Earth.
70,000.
70, sorry. Carry the zero.
Light-years from half. Earth.
Still had its moments, particularly an episode featuring Robert Picardo's holographic doctor, or any episode. Fortunately, we do have something this from scratch, 4K rendition of Voyager's intro by a talented fan. And at first, when I watched this video, I hadn't gone through the article. I just wanted to see what the video was.
Yeah.
And I thought it was somehow a digital remastering of the Voyager intro. It is that good.
Yes, it is.
The person doing it, or the people doing it, because it talks about a person and it talks about a studio, recreated shot by shot every sequence from the opening credits of Voyager. And we still have the intro music in there. We have the reflections as Voyager is going over the rings of that planet. We have it going through the cloud nebula, pushing the clouds off to the sides, the backlit Voyager in the last sequence. It really is beautiful. And I'm hoping that someday we'll get a remastering of all the series. I know that people go back and forth on how they feel about Star Trek, the original series remastered. I, for one, really liked it. I wish that they'd had more of a budget and more of a timeline so that they could have done more with it than they did. But I like the idea that you have something that looks good as you blow the image up and up, as television mm-hmm. sets get larger and larger, and you know, we go to 4K and 8K. I thought it was interesting that I'm watching Heroes and Icons television, and they show all the Star Trek series. And I believe, I'm trying to think now because I'm saying this, but I believe what they do, because they do this for a lot of the shows on that channel, is they blow up anything that has the 4:3 aspect ratio to fit widescreen, which means you're cutting off the top and the bottom.
Yep.
And so you need to have that definition for these older shows to do that. And a lot of Star Trek obviously is shot in the format that you need to blow up to fill the screen. I'm hoping that someday we get that. But in the meantime, this is stunning, I thought.
I just watched it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Stunning is probably the word that I would use, because especially when Voyager comes around and goes over that little icy moon or whatever, and the planet's in the background.
That was beautiful.
Or going through the nebula, or the, I guess it was nebula, you know, you can see the green around the ship.
It had sort of a bow wave in front of it on the original. Mm-hmm. But this really, I kind of want to go out and get a 4K TV right now.
it's like the first time I saw a color picture of the Addams Family set.
Yes.
I was like, wow. Well, it was kind of like the opposite, because it looked like somebody threw up in because the colors they used for black and white, but yeah, it's the same thing, but opposite. How about that?
I think when I do get a 4K TV, the first thing I'm going to have to watch is something Star Trek, just to keep the tradition alive, because the first Blu-ray I had was the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek. And when mm-hmm. I put that DVD in the Blu-ray player and put it on the HDV, it was stop you in your tracks. Oh my God, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even my wife went, what? What is that? I said, that's high definition.
I haven't seen that before. Hey, I think the only thing you're going to be able to watch is one of the newer Star Treks in 4K.
Is there Star Trek in 4K? Is there any Star Trek content in 4K yet?
That's a great question.
Wouldn't Beyond or Into Maybe. Darkness?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah,
possibly.
I'll say one of those two. Yeah.
Because those are new enough that that would might be a format that they're releasing in. But I'm not sure about back catalog at this point. I mean,
have we
have
heard
Blu-rays,
if Discovery is going to be in 4K?
It probably will be.
Well, it's hard to say because Discovery is going to be in a streaming service, and I'm not sure the streaming service is doing well. I guess YouTube
you can do
is
it with
YouTube. 4K.
Netflix has 4K.
Yeah, YouTube can. So, yeah, well, I'm sure they'll have it in a format where you can watch it in 4K. Probably. I would almost bet on that.
Oh, I want to buy a TV.
Well, in the meantime, why don't we move on to our next story?
Fair enough.
Which is up for you, Craig.
Yes.
Is it got porn?
No, but it does address something else we were talking about a little while ago.
I'll say it depends on how you use the replicators.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, ooh.
So one of the major bits of technology introduced in Star Trek The Next Generation, which I personally love this technology, was seen throughout the 24th century Trek shows, was a replicator. These handy devices could make almost anything, and they were so ubiquitous, they were even seen in crew quarters. While an interesting bit of sci-fi tech, Star Trek TNG and DS9 writer-producer Ron Moore feels that they were bad for the show in a new interview with Bleeding Cool. Let's see how they...
We never really found out if they were in all of the crew's quarters. We only saw them in the senior members. So
that's true.
You got to wonder if, you know, Ensign Redshirt doesn't have a replicator. He's just got a cup of soup, a microwave oven. You know?
I'll have to pull out my virtual tour of the Enterprise off my CD-ROM and go in some crew quarters and find out. But I don't remember.
Moore have to say about this?
I'm thinking. I don't remember seeing one in Worf's quarters, but it could have been. Anyway, replicators are the worst things. Destroy storytelling all the time. They mean there's no value to anything. Nothing has value in the universe if you just replicate everything. So all that goes away. Nothing is unique. If you break something, you can just make another one. If something breaks on the ship, oh, no big deal. Geordi LaForge can just go down to engineering and make another widget. Anyway, so... Or they'll go to a planet and the planet needs something. Oh, let's just make it for them. I'm paraphrasing Ron Moore. Yep. The writer's room just hated it and tried to forget about it as much as possible, which I think is probably good because it wasn't a plot point in every Star Trek show.
Only if the replicator couldn't make Earl Grey hot.
I know. What? Cold?
Or if you got a cup of tribbles.
Yeah. I did like on Enterprise, they didn't have replicators so much.
Well, this ties in with something I believe was on Trek movies. Somebody tweeted to the Discovery writers' room this same question. How did they feel about the replicators? And their opinion was the same thing. They hated them as well. That they thought it was, too much of a cheat.
Well, you kind of needed these things if your society was not going to have money, per se.
And I also think that, if we already have 3D printers, the idea that you're not going to be able to keep that technology advancing, in several hundred years, that you wouldn't have replicators to replicate most things that you need, that would seem almost backwards for that not to happen.
Well, I have a feeling that of course, far in the future, that 3D printers are going to belong in the atomic level. So you'll be able to print anything at any material you want. So, which is turning into what we're talking about here. That's just my thought.
Right. I guess it comes down to questions also of, can you then just replicate your dilithium crystals and therefore you don't have to mine them anymore? It does get into questions that maybe you don't want to be addressing, and that's why they hated it so much.
Yeah, we'll blame the fact that we can't reproduce dilithium crystals on the Heisenberg compensator.
There's got to be some sort of canon around that. Just like, dilithium crystals are the source of their energy. So you can't create energy w- without using more energy. It would take more than dilithium crystals to create dilithium crystals. So there's got to be a limit of what you can and cannot create in a replicator.
Right. Well, maybe perpetual. That's a good way to address it. Maybe then you have some episodes where you deal with what are the limits of what a replicator can do.
Right. Teddy bear, no problem.
Yeah.
Because it's on the same principle as...
Yeah, you're not getting another spot data. I'm sorry. That's
it. Replicate the GAT. His pattern stuck in this replicator. Cool.
But could you make something that was original? If you took a painting, for example. You know, if you took a Rembrandt painting, you couldn't replicate a Rembrandt painting. Or, you know, pick your favorite artist there.
Yeah.
There's certain things that I think would be unique that... Unless somebody's illegally scanning this stuff, and now you get into all kinds of licensing and rights and copyright infringement like we have with artists and music and published materials today. Wow, where are we going with this story?
I don't know. Because
copyright law?
Because then you come into questions about, well, are there issues of copyright infringement, you know, in the 23rd, 24th century?
Right. Some of these priceless artifacts that Picard was going around and digging up and collecting... Could you just replicate those? Now they're not priceless. Now they're not rare.
No, I don't feel like going down to this planet and digging it up. Let's just replicate it.
Yeah, that's right.
And once you do dig it up, have somebody scan it so we can make a billion others of them.
Perhaps that's the value is you're the first one to find it, and then you are credited as the person discovering the original of which everything is replicated off of.
So every time someone fires up the replicator, what, your picture comes up on the screen? Brought to you by Jean-Luc Picard.
Copyright information on the screen. Yeah.
Do you accept the terms and conditions of this replication?
Yeah, writers, we feel your pain suddenly.
It's a what? Deep thought. It's kind of fun.
Oh, wait a minute. They added on DVD players a long time ago. They added the copyright flag, so you technically shouldn't be able to dump it out digitally to another device. So,
no one does that, right?
Yeah, no one's ever ripped a movie off of disc. Mm.
Right. Which, you know what? I don't think I remember the flag ever stopping me, but it's more like a suggestion.
Need a more powerful flag. That's the problem right there.
It was more of a suggestion than actuality.
More like guidelines.
Or, you know, the replicator will only replicate 3/4 of whatever it is, so it doesn't actually function. Sorry, Data. Spot isn't quite complete. He's only got 3 legs.
Replicate me 3 cats.
I'll stitch them together. None of them have heads. What's up with that?
A cat centipede. Okay, let's move on our next story.
We have a story from popularmechanics.com regarding Black Mirror, one of my favorite shows on Netflix, and season 4 is showing off some of their shows that are coming up. They flash a title and then they flash a little scene. And wait, what? Is one of them Star Trek? Well, Netflix just released a new trailer for Black Mirror. And for a show that famously dumps on technology, season 4 looks like a mix of intrigue and terror you'd expect. You guys watch Black Mirror?
I have not had a chance to start watching it yet. I figure when I start watching it, it's going to be binge time.
Do yourself a favor. Do not start with season 1, episode 1. Just skip over that and come back later. It is a terrible introduction. Great story, but not the best introduction. And Bonnie will never watch it again. Start with season 3 and come back to season 1 when you've had a good time.
Okay. I think the season 3 was pretty cool. The social and network and stuff that they were doing. That was cool.
Follow our show note links to this. By the way, we have another video for you to watch. The 50-second spot is just a rundown for the episode titles and future seasons set to debut on Netflix likely later this year. Some titles are as cryptic as Hang the DJ. I don't know if Hang is his name.
Maybe that's so cryptic. Maybe that's straight up.
Maybe that's his name. My name is Hang.
Snakes on a plane. Snakes on a plane.
And Archangel. But... the USS Callister is an obvious homage to the USS Enterprise and a quirky couple of seconds that looks like a direct spoof of Roddenberry's masterpiece.
Yes.
We don't know how much we don't know much from the trailer, as all good trailers should be, except that a woman's hand glows ominously. She might be the Iron Fist. We don't know. And Black Mirror has the budget for some decent CGI exteriors of the Callister. But with Seth MacFarlane's own Star Trek spoof, The Orville, as well as an all-new Star Trek series, it's shaping up to be a season of Trek.
Yay! Oh, close enough. Because the topic is Trek.
That's right. Hey, I was watching that promo. Actually, it was like, I think it was kind of late at night, and I started playing it. And I was messing around on the phone, too, and I glanced over and went, whoa, whoa, what was that? Back up. And I was like, that looked like Star Trek for a second, or like the interior of the TARDIS, or, you know, something weird. I was like, whoa, whoa, what's that? Whoa, it looks like Star Trek. So,
yeah, it's kind of an odd mishmash of looks in it, but clearly heavily Star Trek influenced.
The colors of the shirts, the layout of the bridge that you just get from that glimpse. Clearly influenced.
All right, very cool. All right, let's move on to our next story, and this takes us back to Ticonderoga, New York.
Ticonderoga.
Not the USS Ticonderoga.
No.
It's turning into Trek USA is what it's doing.
Yes. A donation from the former wife of a late heir to the Mars candy fortune is helping a New York businessman to buy the upstate building where his recreated Star Trek set is a major tourist draw.
Whoa.
The Ticonderoga Revitalization Alliance, a local development agency, says a $300,000 gift from Deborah Clark Ryan will enable James Colley to buy the building in the village that houses his Star Trek original series set tour.
Cha-ching. Wow.
Clark Ryan and Colley are both Ticonderoga natives. She's the former wife of Forrest Mars Jr., who died last year. While married, the couple were major supporters of Fort Ticonderoga, where the education center is named after her. Colley's studio set mimics those of the 1960s TV series. A three-day Star Trek convention starting Friday is expected to draw hundreds of visitors to Ticonderoga. And I've always wanted to go. I mean, I've been to this set, as we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go to this convention, but it's always right before Dragon Con, so I can't do that. But I think this is, you know, the hits just keep coming for these people, and I'm so happy about it. We talked, I think it was last episode, about that officially sanctioned like movie camp that they're doing.
Yeah.
And now they have the ability to buy the building, which is I think it's an old shopping grocery store that the thing is in, and just outright buy the building. And this is fantastic news. And it seems to keep getting better and better for these guys.
You know what? I have a feeling all three of us should go up there and do a fan film.
Yeah. I'm down for that, or up for that, mm-hmm. whichever.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
All right. So
That's amazing story that's come around like that, because, you know, they built the set and did some fan films, and then Paramount, of course, laid the smackdown on everybody. And then they kind of got a reprieve a little bit with that because they got to keep the sets. Now they can make it the whole building. That's awesome.
Yep. So, and it'd be good for downtown, the area around that as well. I'm sure as they are able to bring more people in, because there's a few small businesses right around there. And I think that will only encourage more people and encourage more business, and it'd be very good for the whole area.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of areas have done that. We were on our way back from Las Vegas, and we went through Lake Havasu to see the London Bridge, the original London Bridge that they bought from the City of London in the late 60s. And there's a whole shopping ecosystem right around that one bridge. So I'd love to see the same kind of thing happen for this as well.
It reminds me of Mount Airy in North Carolina. You know where that's at, right? You know what that is? Huh?
It's not coming to me. Clue me in.
Yep. Andy Griffith. That's where Andy Griffith grew.
Oh.
And that's actually the town where, I'm sorry, the Andy Griffith, where Mayberry was modeled after. You know, the story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or so if when you go, I was there a couple years ago and we ate in a diner, you know, and it had, you could see Floyd's Barbershop, stuff like that. There, some of the businesses there were named after places on Mayberry. Of course, course, they play it up now, and they have a festival there. I remember who moved there? Thelma Lou. Who played Thelma Lou? I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, she moved there. She lives there currently. And anyway, so there you go. Neat. They have a big statue with Opie and Andy, like from the opening of the show downtown.
Yeah, people will get a nice statue of Captain Kirk. Who knows?
Holding Spock's hand as they walk down with a fishing pole.
Miramani! Okay. Let's move on to
Spock,
our next story.
They're going
to
all go camping and Spock will pull out his marshmallow.
Yeah.
I had to steer this back to Trek because on this show, the topic is Trek.
All right. And let's take things off, Craig.
All right. So, you ever watched the IT Crowd? I know.
Oh, Chuck, I love that show. Oh, I love that show. I'm going through it again. Okay.
All right. Yeah, probably it's about the time for me to watch it too. But this is IT Crowd meets Star Trek.
Oh, no.
And this is kind of funny. He starts taking phone calls on the Enterprise. And the first one is about a replicator, which we just talked about. How it's not making the.
My cat is right only three quarters formed.
Yeah. That's right.
Did you try turning it off and on again?
Yeah, that's right. So Star Trek episodes love to present crisis-level engineering problems that Scotty and Geordi must solve to save the ship. As any IT person could tell you, though, a densely populated ship is going to have its share of mundane technical problems.
Amen, brother.
Yeah, most of which are caused by human error. The Bitter IT Guys YouTube channel made this funny short clip. It depicts the life of the USSD tech support officer who spends his day fielding complaints from ship residents with typically unreasonable demands for the ship's computer. So this is hilarious. I recommend anybody watch this, especially if you have worked in IT at any capacity.
That's a brilliant premise. They're right. Life is not all about the crisis. It's about the mundane. It's about the glacial speed and the plate tectonic speed at which things go. But it's crazy. I would love to see this. You know, my printout didn't come out. We've all had our situations with IT equipment. I mean, I'm having one right now with Skype. Imagine if the communicator, Captain, hailing frequencies are open, but there's a crackling noise in my left channel.
And my pad doesn't connect to the Wi-Fi on the ship.
I forgot the password.
Ambassador Sarek, it's good to see you. As is you, Commander Captain Picard. What's your Wi-Fi password anyway?
The Wi-Fi password is 1701D.
So much. Yeah.
Why do I have to accept these terms? I don't understand.
My computer doesn't open Notepad.
I was in the middle of a replicator upgrade and the OS crashed. What do I do?
I have half a cat.
Why is Lieutenant Tasha Yar trying to seduce me here? Wait, what?
7 of 9 has come unplugged again.
I've been trying turning her off and on again. Oh, let's not go there. Let's stop.
I can't print. There you go. There's a simple one. So please,
we're not even going to get into the transporter. That's just a whole other nest.
And look, listener, all these links in our show note is not just links for your, you know, convenience. It's homework to do it for next.
There's a test next week.
Yeah, pop this.
All right, let's move on to our last story.
All right, I get a beauty of one here. All right. Why George R.R. Martin wasn't hired to write for Star Trek The Next Generation. That sounds like there should be an or on that, like a Bullwinkle cartoon. Or.
Or.
Turn again next time.
Beam me up, Scotty. Before writing his A Song of Ice and Fire book saga, which was adapted for TV as HBO's Emmy-winning Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin wrote scripts for television and worked on a couple of cult series such as The Twilight Zone and Beauty and the Beast, the one with Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman. But did you know that Martin almost came on board Star Trek The Next Generation as a writer when Paramount decided to go ahead with the new Star Trek series?
Hey, they just couldn't. They couldn't afford the captain's chair with all the swords.
They couldn't. They couldn't wait 12 years for him to finish the next episode, is what I'm guessing.
They'll sit in that captain's chair.
That is until Martin, who had had several Hugo Awards as a sci-fi writer to his name, supposedly met with the show's unnamed producer, and everything went downhill from there. Oh, hey, where's the said trombone when you need it?
Wop, 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 wop.
Right close there. Enough. According to the Trek movie, while speaking at the workshop at UCSD's Arthur C. Clarke Center for Human Imagination a while back, Martin opened up about going for an interview in order to nab a position as a staff writer, saying, and I'm and not
by the
doing
way, this is yep. This is how television works, folks. Listen to this story.
I had an interview with Star Trek The Next Generation for a possible job as a staff writer. I remember coming in to the office of this producer, who thankfully did not last long on the show, and you can see why when I tell the story. He said, "I don't know who you are. Can you tell me your credentials?" And I said, "I'm just coming off of Twilight Zone. I'm just coming out of the Twilight Zone, where I worked for a while. But before that, I wrote novels and short stories. I'm primarily a science fiction writer." And he said, "Oh, really? Well, Star Trek is not a science fiction show. It's a people show." Oh, my. "I was fooled by the photon torpedoes and starships. I was misled. Needless to say, I did not get that job." Star Trek The Next Generation, of course, finally started to find its footing in Season 3 and gave us stellar episodes such as Yesterday's Enterprise and The Best of Both Worlds Part 1. That's to say nothing about Part 2? Okay. Then again, the thoughts of what could have been.
So, that is sadly how television works, folks, as I said.
He is quoted as saying, my mind went blank.
"You know nothing, Jon Snow." Hey, that's good. I got to write that down.
"Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my head. Nothing up my sleeve."
Okay, that's what I was trying to say.
An android has no name.
And that is our news. That was a lot of news. Now it's time to go on to our main mission. And it's time for us to take a head out on our main mission, where we take a Z minus 10,000 meter dive into one subject and try to stay on course. So
try to stay on course.
We try.
Operative word there.
So, gentlemen, here is our topic.
Yes.
Disney has announced that it will be pulling its content from Netflix and starting its own streaming service. Do you think it would be a good idea for CBS Paramount to pull Star Trek from other streaming services and make all the movies and TV series exclusive to CBS All Access?
Well, whose point of view are we talking
right,
from?
We got the consumer point of view and then the producer content creator point of view.
Let's go from I'm the person who's wanting to watch Star Trek. Let's
from a consumer standpoint. No, I don't want more subscription services. I want everything in one nice place where I can get it, and I'm willing to pay a little bit more. If Netflix were to say, "Hey, our rates are going up. You're currently on $11. Next year it's going to be $13 because we're adding this, and this." Great.
Wait a minute. So that means that if it did go to CBS, you'd be willing to pay for it.
It depends on the price. If it went only up $2 on Netflix rather than paying $7, mm-hmm. What is it, $7 a month?
I think it's $5. What am I paying? I'm paying $5 or something.
I'm going to have to check this out in the next 25 days.
Yeah.
CBS is, I'm doing it without commercials. Because
yes, I'm doing it with commercials because it's Star Trek. I expect commercials.
I'll tell you why I'm not doing it with commercials, but that's another story. I'm sorry, Chuck. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's the same kind of thing as needing a separate device for your Apple TV or your whatever your favorite Amazon Prime video player is. Like, oh, for crying out loud, people. Just make a freaking Amazon video player for Apple TV, which I understand they will have later this year. But you got to cater to the consumer, in my opinion. There's more of us than there are of them. Now, I'll let you guys finish before I flip over to the producer side.
Okay, right, because we'll flip over at that point. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, as a consumer, I do find it frustrating. And it's not so much because I'd be paying that for Star Trek. It's like, okay, great. I know I could get all my Star Trek in one spot.
Yep.
But that means, oh, then there's this one other thing that's over in the second service. And, oh, there's this one thing over in this third service.
Right.
And we talk about, I really view this as the breakup of television, which long ago was just free. And then you went to cable where everything was there for one price. And now television is reassembling itself as networks, but you have to pay for every single one of them separately.
In a way, I kind of get this. I have long been an advocate of a la carte. When we had cable and you were paying an outrageous bill, $100, $200 a month, whatever it was, with your phone and internet and gobbledygook, I said, look, I don't watch QVC. I don't watch C-SPAN and C-SPAN 2. I don't watch ESPN and ESPN 2. There are 90% of these channels I don't want. I will pay $3, $4, $5 a month for this channel, the five that I watch, and my bill will be a quarter of what it was before. So in a way, we're kind of getting back there. It's just delivered through a different medium.
Well, the question is, well, you know, the more television you watch, the more, like, we watch BattleBots. Okay, so that's the Science Channel to watch BattleBots. And we watch this one other show. Let's say we watch Dancing with the Stars. Okay, so now I'm buying the ABC app. I'm watching Star Trek. I'm buying the CBS one. Every single show, potentially, you know, if you're only watching six shows, you might be buying six services.
Right. And that's to the detriment of some of these other networks or channels. Who's going to buy the, you know, the C-SPAN channel package? Except well, maybe my parents.
That's included with everything anyway. We'll just give that one away.
Right. Do we really need another reality TV show? They'll probably stick that on CBS All Access. But there's a reason why those packages were made and those channels bundled that certain way, and then premium and then super premium and pay-per-view. So I get it from a business standpoint, but from a consumer standpoint, I don't want to pay for what I'm not using.
Yeah. Well, that, I think we're getting the, a little more than we bargained for when everybody wanted to cut the cord, which I don't subscribe to cable or DirecTV or anything. Yeah, so, you know, at first I'm like, wow, that sounds great, being able to get just what I want, and that's it. And now everything's kind of splintering where you need to purchase several services, which does come close back to the cable pricing.
Right, so yeah, like, when you cut the cord, it's like, great, I just have to have Netflix and Hulu, and I'm all set.
Right.
Yeah, and CBS. Yeah, I'm all set.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, I'll tell you
from a consumer... Like- starts to sound like a Monty Python thing. Our two chief weapons are surprise and fear. Fear and surprise.
From a consumer. Wait a minute. I didn't get to throw my opinion out there.
Finish up. Yep.
All right. So from a consumer point of view, I think it's great because I do have Hulu, CBS, Netflix, and Amazon Prime. So it's really cool to be able to stream all, you know, four series at once. Mm-hmm. So I can watch TOS, TNG, Voyager, and DS9 at the same time. Although my family isn't very happy with me.
I would be sad to see the Star Trek content go from Netflix.
Left out again.
Yeah.
I would not be surprised to see CBS, like Disney, pull their content and put it on their own network. That increases value of the CBS All Access package to say, hey, if you want Star Trek, this is the one-stop shop. You don't have some over here and some over there. It's all in one place. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. Yeah. And I'm going to get CBS All Access to watch Discovery and whatever else they have of value on there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about we live in a subscription-driven society today. Craig and I wouldn't have a job if we didn't. I mean, our employer is subscription driven. So I'm not complaining about the model. From a consumer standpoint, it's like, another freaking $5 a month I got to pay. I just had an argument with the car wash because they tried to sell me a subscription-based car wash service. Like it's getting a little crazy these days. You got to watch your P's and Q's, or you could find yourself in hundreds of dollars of debt on $5 here, $20 there, $50 here.
One of my questions, though, is that, all right, you've got a new Star Trek series coming out, and people know about it. But as you splinter into these things, you have no necessarily common ground anymore. I suppose you can make the argument that people may have subscribed to HBO to get Game of Thrones. But right. You then... It's harder, I think, to get the word out if you're suddenly faced with 30, 40, 50 subscriptions for all this stuff. You start to make judgments about, well, I don't know if that's worth it to have just for this or just for that. It's like just as people are saying with CBS All Access, I'm not going to pay for Star Trek. I'm not going to pay $5.99 just to watch one show. So it then becomes harder for a show possibly to get recognition unless it's on one of the subscription services that everybody is getting already.
That's a good point. Do you do you put your show where the people are, or do you put the show on its own thing to get more money? Yeah, it's a balancing act. I'm sure that's not an easy executive decision to make.
Right. So that's what I was thinking. The other side from CBS Paramount's point of view is it in their best interest for, say, a franchise like Star Trek to say, we want to just put it all in this niche over here on CBS All Access, or we want it spread as wide as possible so that people see it, whether they have Netflix or Amazon Prime or, you know, whatever the other service is, you know, which, what is best for them? Now, with Disney, they're able to say, all right, we're going to pull our stuff in, but we're distributing our stuff in the theaters. We have theme parks. We have stores. Mm-hmm. There's a wide range of ways of getting our information out about any property that we're working on. With a property like Star Trek, you have a movie every couple of years, and then it's hopefully more television, but you have television.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you get that word out if it's all clustered in one place over here?
Yeah, I think spreading it out probably makes a little more sense for everybody. Really,
we're going to come up with the topic is Trek All Access package.
Yeah,
see our Patreon link for more info.
All right, so I think we've pretty much come to the conclusion that we don't know.
There's a lot of discussion to be had around that topic, not even specific to Star Trek, but my prediction is we will see more of this in the future.
Oh, absolutely. And
it's also my prediction. This is why we work in podcasting and not television.
Right. Don't have to worry about any of this, and we don't get paid millions of dollars. So there.
That's right.
But we also have a Facebook page. So if you have any thoughts about this or anything else that we talk about on the show, you can go to the Facebook page, the topic is Trek, and leave your thoughts on, you know, what do you feel about CBS All Access and pulling Star Trek into it or not, or, you know, anything else. All right, let's move on. Let's come back from our main mission, and it's time to move on to our Warp Speed Roundtable.
Not exactly the right sound effect for warp speed. We'll have to work on that. We just got on board and the klaxons are going.
Red alert, what?
We're going to warp 10.
Someone left their popcorn in the replicator too long.
No, they left that 3/4 of a cat in the replicator. Okay. So this is a fast topic that I just throw out and everyone has just a second or two to come up with their opinion or their thought on it. Gentlemen, can you name, and this is a holdover from last week when we were talking about Star Trek The Next Generation's 30th anniversary.
Yes.
So can you name something that you think was a real treasure on Star Trek The Next Generation? It can be either a specific tangible thing or a concept or something.
Yeah, I did a little digging. I was going with the tangible thing, and I came up with the Gorlon prayer stick. And from memory, Alpha, it says, the Gorlon prayer stick was an extremely rare artifact, but had no real value as an antique, except perhaps to students of archaeology, such as Jean-Luc Picard. Captain Picard was in the possession of a Gorlon prayer stick and kept it in his quarters aboard the USS Enterprise D. He traded a bottle of very old Saurian brandy for the artifact. He later gave the prayer stick to Jason Vigo as a parting gift in Bloodlines.
All right. What about you, Craig?
Craig.
No, go ahead.
I chose the Horgon or Horgon. I can't ever say that. Horgon. Anyway, it's the fertility symbol on Risa, you know, the one that Riker had and gave to Picard. It just seemed like that was kind of a fun thing. If it was a real, it would be a real treasure if you had one, right?
Are you seeking Jamaharon?
Yes. I'm wondering if it shows up in that, that porn parody.
Craig's going to be carrying one around Dragon Con, hoping for the best.
I really thought about making one and walking around with it, but
oh my, here yeah. comes Lursa and Beator cosplayers.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that that would be a real treasure from TNG, if there was such a thing.
Well, for me, the real treasure that I thought of was something that we saw several times, and it was poker. Because first when you're watching Star Trek The Next Generation, you think, this is not really advancing the plot of the story to have them sitting around playing poker. But it became a mainstay of learning how the characters interacted with each other.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. kind of a glimpse into what they did in their off time.
Yep. And then
I thought the closing, the last scene.
The last scene with Picard sitting down at the table was, it really emphasized that aspect of the show. You're right. That was a great concept.
Well, even Data playing with all the important figures in science.
Einstein yes. and Newton and Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
Which was really played by Stephen Hawking.
That's right. And Einstein was really played by Einstein, which is amazing.
Yeah. They actually went back in time, did that.
Newton was holding out for a higher contract pay.
Yeah. They got a stunt double for him. So, you know, a lookalike. Lots of work in Hollywood for Sir Isaac Newton lookalikes.
Right. Hey, somebody's looking through, what is it, the want ads for actors. Oh, finally, I got it.
Yes.
My years of practicing, you paid off.
Yeah. All right. So that was our Warp Speed Roundtable. And now it's time to boldly go that away until next episode. So if you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. You can follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. And be sure to check out the other mostly non-Trek related podcasts we work on, Technorama and Comedy Forecast. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, don't put on the red shirt!
Now, where did I put my Horgon?